For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. Houthi rebels in Yemen say former President Ali Abdullah Saleh has been killed. Unverified images claiming to show his body are circulating on social media after clashes with Houthi forces. As recently as last week, former President Saleh's supporters had been fighting with the Houthis against the government of Yemen in a civil war. European Council President Donald Tusk says the EU and UK are closer to agreement that would allow Brexit talks to move to the next phase. UK Prime Minister Theresa May is in Brussels for talks with EU officials, from which she hopes to return with a deal. In Malta, police have arrested 10 people in connection with the murder of investigative journalist Daphne Caruana Galizia. She was killed in a car bomb in October and had been a prominent blogger on the issue of corruption. Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull's declared it time for Australia to legalise same-sex marriage, as one of his MPs made history by proposing on the floor of Parliament. Arthur Stevens reports.
MP Tim Wilson made history in Australian Parliament by asking his long-term partner Ryan Bolger to marry him. Soon after the lower house started a debate, a private bill passed by the Senate last week.
Ryan Patrick Bolger, will you marry me?
More than 100 MPs are expected to speak on the bill drafted by Liberal Senator Dean Smith over the coming days. A final vote is expected by Thursday when Parliament is scheduled to rise for the year. The Prime Minister hailed it a momentous social reform following a long and arduous road littered with injustice for gay and lesbian Australians. Arthur Stevens, Melbourne.
The World Anti-Doping Agency has announced that intelligence it has seems to confirm allegations about state-sponsored doping in Russian sport. The statement comes on the eve of the International Olympic Committee's decision on whether Russia can take part in next year's Winter Games in South Korea. Daria Bondarchuk reports from Moscow.
WADA has confirmed the authenticity of the database reportedly originating from Moscow's anti-doping laboratory, Rosada, whose accreditation it suspended 2 years ago. It seems to prove, WADA says, earlier allegations that Russia took measures to protect its athletes who used doping between 2012 and 2015. These claims come on the eve of Tuesday's vote by the IOC set to decide whether Russia will take part in 2018 Winter Olympics. Moscow has consistently denied allegations of state-sponsored doping.
Rahul Gandhi's filed his nomination for president of the opposition Congress Party in India. He's been the party's vice president for almost 5 years. Rebecca Bundon reports from Mumbai.
Rahul Gandhi has signed his nomination papers at the Congress headquarters in New Delhi for president of the party in place of his mother, Sonia Gandhi. By Monday evening India time, Mr. Gandhi's elevation from vice president of the opposition party is expected to be official. This comes ahead of critical elections taking place in Prime Minister Narendra Modi's home state of Gujarat this month. Rebecca Bundon, Mumbai.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thanks very much, Ollie Barrett. Welcome to Monday's Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. We're live right now on Fab Radio 2, Tune In Radio as well. Hope you've had a good weekend. Got a really interesting programme lined up for you over the next couple of hours. So we'll just do it right now then.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. It's the Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
And we're going to kick off with some good news this week. Vera Toomey returns to the Richie Allen Show. Vera was on the programme some months ago talking about her beautiful girl Ava, who has a rare form of epilepsy causing her to have multiple fits. They ended up spending a lot of time in the Netherlands because cannabis oil, THC, had a wonderful effect on those seizures and reduced them greatly, but they couldn't get the oil in Ireland. It's illegal in Ireland. However, last week the Irish government has said that the family can have a license so that young Ava can get that oil and she doesn't have to leave her home city of Cork. Vera Toomey joins me this hour. Really, really good news story. And I'm looking forward in the second hour to speaking with Anne Marie Waters for the first time. She's the leader of the newly formed political party For Britain. You might remember Anne Marie Waters stood for the leadership of UKIP recently We'll be chatting about Brexit, today's news, radical Islam, free speech in the 21st century, and much more besides Anne-Marie Waters in the second hour. Hope you're good. Hope you're good. Dull old day here. Not dull work-wise. I was pretty busy at work. But a dull old day weather-wise here in the great city. I said already, I hope you had a restful and relaxing weekend. You can tweet me at any stage between now and the end of the programme. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Tweet me, tell me what you're thinking. Particularly if you disagree with something I say or something one of my guests has to say. Do that. The more disagreeable, the better. Not necessarily the better, but the more likely we are to seek you out and read it out in the interest of balance and all of that. Right, so we'll jump straight in because there are a few things I'd like to get into before Vera joins us live from Cork. So it's a big day for the UK's decision to leave the European Union. A big day for the old Brexit, be Jesus. Now, Theresa May met with Jean-Claude Juncker in Brussels today. May, of course, wants the European Union to move on now to talk about future trade arrangements. But, as you know, the European Union wouldn't budge and said it wouldn't budge until there was a deal on the money that the UK pays as part of the divorce settlement. Number two, an agreement on the rights of EU workers in the UK. And number three, a deal on the border issue. The border being the UK's land border with the Republic of Ireland. That would be Northern Ireland. Complicated? Question mark? Question mark? Question mark? Not really, but they, the media and those involved, are trying to do everything they can to make it complicated. Maybe so that you who voted to leave, will just get tired of the whole bloody thing and you'll just start to turn away from it. They being Juncker and Barnier and all the other lackeys of the European Union. Now, the European Union sees Ireland as its fiefdom, of course. It sees every country, which is a member of the European Union, is part of that fiefdom. It is, right? So, the European Union says that the border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland is actually a border between the UK and the European Union. See, nobody's talking about this today. By the way, the next time a UK news presenter says Southern Ireland, I'm going to find him or her, I'm going to put them over my knee, and I'm going to wail the bejesus out of their arse. There's no such place as Southern Ireland. There is the Republic of Ireland, and there is Northern Ireland. Anyway, the arrogant EU, and by the way, the Irish Prime Minister, the Irish Taoiseach, whose name is Leo Varadkar, they go along with this. He couldn't say enough times today, the Irish Prime Minister, Leo Varadkar, that he's part of Team Europe. So they go along with this. The Northern Ireland border with the Republic is actually a border between the UK and the EU. That's how they see it. Now, Kay Burley on Sky News, Kay, good old Kay, she had Peter Lilly on the programme today. Now, Lilly is a former deputy leader of the Conservative Party. He's also held very senior positions ministerially in the Conservative Party over the years. Listen to Burley's question, her first question to Peter Lilly. Listen to this.
Mr. Lilly, it's a problem of our own making. You know, it's not the European Union's fault. We chose to leave the European Union. As a result, they're absolutely within their right to protect their borders. And that border would be the border between Northern Ireland and the rest of Ireland.
Their borders. You see, their borders. Ireland is not sovereign. It's a county. Ireland is a city. A massive town now in Europe, effectively. This is the craziness of it. The language being used and nobody's asking questions about it. Anyway, Peter Lilly gave a very good response to that about this border issue.
They can protect their borders, we can protect ours. We believe we can protect ours without putting border posts. Why can't they do the same? We didn't hear, as Sophie seemed to sort of draw back from saying they won't put up border posts and to saying they have rules and they've got to be applied. Well, why can't they be a little flexible in this case?
Good question.
It isn't necessary to have border posts. At the present, you know, we have to control for really important things, guns and drugs. But we don't do it by means of border posts. Any controls are done away from the border and with great cooperation between the Irish authorities and the British authorities. It will be possible for us to cooperate with the European Union so that actually they can ensure that there's not sort of smuggling across the border of things that we allow to be produced that they don't allow to be produced. But in the same way as we stop the smuggling of drugs and guns, not with border posts.
Yeah. Very good. Very simple. Why there's such a protracted argument about the border between Northern Ireland and the Republic. Why not say, look, we just let things carry on. You know, it benefits the businesses in the north and in the south. We don't get our knickers in a twist about it. There are bigger things to discuss. But Brexit must be destroyed, right? Must be destroyed. So apparently, at lunchtime today, over, I'd love to know what was on the menu for lunch, by the way. I'd love to know. Answers on a postcard. Theresa May was getting nowhere with Jean-Claude Ever the Drunker. So because she was getting nowhere, she suggested that nothing changes between the UK and Ireland. Why impose a hard border? Just be flexible. Carry on as before. There is a unique relationship. And so on. Drunker said no as he fell off his chair after his sixth Corvusier. I'm making this up. Apparently then, Theresa May suggested that Northern Ireland could stay in the single market and the customs union. Anything but to go back to the old days of a customs border and all the negativity that would bring to businesses north and south. We don't need border posts. Now at this point, Drunker sobered up and he said, well, maybe. Because that would be wonderful for the European Union, for the North to stay in the European Union by the back door, right? But then, apparently, the Democratic Unionist Party, well, they heard this and they shit their bed, properly shit their bed. No washing those sheets. They'll have to be buried somewhere. New sheets are the order of the day. Now, the Democratic Unionist Party is a unionist party. It wants to keep Northern Ireland part of the UK forever. They would see that, and I don't blame them, that Northern Ireland staying in the European Union Trade and Customs Union, well, the DUP would see that as a separation of sorts between the North and the mainland. And the DUP would see that as Republicans north and south of the border getting closer to a united Ireland. And remember, the Democratic Unionist Party are the reason, or is the reason, I should say, get your grammar book out. The DUP is the reason that Theresa May is Prime Minister. They gave her the numbers she needed through the confidence and supply agreement to get a majority. You see where this is going. You see where all this is going, right? You don't have to be Lieutenant Columbo. Now, Nicola Sturgeon in Scotland, old Nicola. Fanda be dozy. So Nicola Sturgeon is delighted with this. She's practically shitting the bed, but not out of fear. She's delighted. She's saying, well, if Northern Ireland can stay in the single market, why can't we? Sadiq Khan, the Mayor of London, he's saying, well, London is a huge financial centre of the world and Londoners voted to stay in, so why can't we have a boutique arrangement with the European Union? Going to use a bad word now, children. Theresa May is fucked. I told you this weeks ago. This is all about destroying the government, bringing her down, so that we'll have an election sometime in the spring, maybe earlier. At that point, Jeremy Flip-Flop Sideshow Bob Corbyn and probably a few good men and women from the Lib Dems and the SNPs will form a rainbow coalition government and Brexit will be destroyed, if it isn't destroyed anyway. Right. Shall we leave Brexit alone? Fandabito. The government, the UK government, has suspended a foreign aid project after a BBC Panorama investigation found, wait for it, taxpayers' cash was being diverted to extremists in Syria. How wonderful. Officers from a UK-backed police force in Syria have also been working with courts carrying out brutal sentences. This is where your tax pounds are going. It's going to lunatics in Syria. A UK government spokesman said, "We take allegations of cooperation with terrorist groups extremely seriously." Adam Smith International is the British company running the project. They are accused, basically, of allowing money go to nutters. They strongly deny the allegations. Ortiz Polly Boyko, very good reporter. Polly has the story here. Have a listen.
Well, look, up until last night, the British government had a scheme whereby it provided funding towards policing and community services in opposition-held areas of Syria, areas of Syria that the government doesn't control. And this project was about funding the so-called Free Syrian Police Force. And it was implemented by this company, Adam Smith International. We're outside the headquarters here in London. Adam Smith International is a think tank, a lobbying group, and it promotes democratic values around the world. It effectively worked as an intermediary. So its job was to take the government's money and hand it to the right people in Syria. But given the chaotic nature of civil war and perhaps the makeup of the Syrian opposition, the BBC Panorama is now alleging that British taxpayers' money may have ended up in the hands of extremists as a result of this British government scheme. According to documents seen by the investigation, police in the Aleppo province were forced to hand over cash to an extremist group that was in control of the area there. It also claims that the Syrian branch of Al-Qaeda, Jabhat al-Nusra, had hand-picked police officers for two of these Free Syrian Police stations in Idlib province. And there are allegations that there were dead and fictitious people on the force's payroll. Now, the Foreign Office has confirmed that funding for this scheme has now been suspended.
Yeah, it's been suspended because they've been caught with their trousers down. UK taxpayer money has gone to a honest-to-God psychotic lunatic police force in Syria that carries out summary executions, including a case where two women, God loves them, and I mean it, were stoned to death for God knows what. Imagine it. Police handing some of the money given to them through this foundation to extremist groups who are actually controlling the area. Those extremist groups, by the way, hand-picking the police officers. Dead and fictitious people on the police payroll. Back in April, Boris Johnson announced £4 million more would be going to this scheme to support this police force in Syria. Don't for a minute think it's an accident. Don't for a minute think it's just one of those things where somebody got it badly wrong. We have been funding, supporting and cheerleading jihadist nutters in Syria since 2009. We have 18 and a half minutes past the hour. Benjamin Netanyahu addressed the Israeli people yesterday. I was going to bring you that, but I'm running tight on time, so maybe I can't do that. No, I will. We'll bring you a bit of Benjamin. He addressed the Israeli people from Tel Aviv. His message, as usual, was full of fear and packed with lies. And I wonder how much of it is related to the fact that the Israeli Prime Minister stands accused of two counts of corruption, with the opposition party in Tel Aviv saying that he's even introducing legislation that would make it impossible for the police to investigate him in Israel, a law that should be called Bibi's Law because it will effectively benefit him and stop the probes into his financial dealings. Anyway, here's Netanyahu, and of course he's speaking about Iran.
I speak so often about Iran because I read history. When tyrants call for the destruction of my people, I believe them. I don't have the luxury of discounting their genocidal threats. So let me reiterate Israel's policy. We will not allow a regime hell-bent on the annihilation of the Jewish state to acquire nuclear weapons. We will not allow that regime to entrench itself militarily in Syria, as it seeks to do, for the express purpose of eradicating our state. Recently, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia referred to Iran's supreme leader as the new Hitler of the Middle East. Obviously, there are some important differences between Nazi Germany and the Islamic Republic of Iran, but both regimes do have two important things in common. One, a ruthless commitment to impose tyranny and terror, and second, a ruthless commitment to murder Jews. My friends, one day the Iranian regime will fall. Iranian mothers and fathers will rejoice in the streets. Israel will be the first in line to restore relations and rebuild our great partnership.
Yeah, there's no need for me to comment on that. The Iranians haven't attacked any country in nearly 500 years. They are not the threat to stability in that region. Not going to labour that point. Thought you might want to hear that. It's 21 minutes past the hour. Going to take a very quick break. When we come back, Vera Toomey will be live from Cork. What a wonderful thing that is, to chat about her daughter, Ava, and the great news they had last week. And later on in the programme, Anne-Marie Waters, the leader of the For Britain party, joins the programme as well. William Henderson, my mate in Scotland, says, Richie, you need to work on that Scottish accent. I can't do any accents, William. All of my accents sound the same. If I was attempting to do an American accent, a London accent, a Scottish accent, they all come out the absolute same. Back in a minute with more on Monday's Richie Allen Show.
Book launches are often hyped. Then you open the first page and... But David Icke's new book, Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told, really will astonish you. Thought-provoking and controversial. It's available now, so read a real page-turner. Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told, by former footballer and presenter David Icke. Available exclusively at davidicke.com.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Right, welcome back to the programme. 24 minutes past the hour. It is Monday and it is the 4th of December 2017. I always have to look at the calendar on the wall, forever getting the date wrong. Anyway, I'm delighted to be welcoming back a pretty special lady to the programme. We caught up with her a few months ago. She was in the Netherlands at the time, and things were pretty difficult. at that particular time. Her beautiful daughter, Ava, has a rare form of epilepsy, which caused her, and untreated, would leave her with multiple very severe seizures on a daily basis. Not much quality of life there. They found out that cannabis oil, THC oil, dramatically reduced the seizures and vastly improved the quality of life for young Ava. However, costing them an arm and a leg, they had to spend, you know, nearly all their time in the Netherlands because it's the only place that Ava could get the cannabis oil. But thankfully, in the last few days, the Irish government has issued a license to Ava so that she can get that vital medicine and she can have it at home. That must have come as wonderful news to her parents, Vera and Paul. And thankfully, Vera Toomey is live on the line now from Agabalogue in Cork. Vera, welcome back. How are you?
Hi. Very well, Richie. How are you keeping?
I'm keeping really well, Vera. Thanks very much. Tell us how exciting it was to get that news last week.
Oh, God, it was like a dream. It was like, you know, Richie, we weren't very accustomed to getting good news over the past kind of 2 years as we tried to work towards getting this for Ava. So when I got a call Tuesday morning to let us know that the license had actually been signed on Monday night, the person who rang me, I it might kind of sound funny, but I said to him, "Are you sure?" It was absolutely just so happy for her, you know, because medical CBD and THC works for Dravet syndrome in Ava's condition. And I'm not suggesting that it worked for everybody now, sorry putting it that way maybe, but like it's changed Ava's life completely, absolutely and totally.
Had you given up hope, Vera, you and Paul and the family and friends? Did you think, because when we spoke last, we talked about the march to Dublin, the massive support that you had from people all over the country. You'd been on national television and radio. Everybody was of the opinion that, look, it obviously works. It can't do any harm. We need to give it to Ava. But yet it wasn't happening. Had you kind of given up hope that it would happen?
Absolutely never in a million years. No. Giving up was never an option, Richie. Absolutely not. Because Ava had no options left. And this was our final chance. So, like, you know, Paul and I were what she had to do the job for her, to try and get this for her. I was never going to give up. Never, ever.
Remind our listeners, Vera, I know it's been a crazy busy day for you. I know a lot of people have had you on various programs. Remind our listeners about Dravet syndrome and the severity of the seizures that Ava had to suffer on a daily basis. I mean, it was a terrible life, wasn't it?
It was a very, very pain-filled life, Richie. Ava could have up to 20 tonic-clonic seizures in a day. So the tonic-clonic seizures are the ones that, you know, you fall to the ground and shake and your muscles go into spasm. So Ava was living a life where, you know, some days she might get 20, another day she might get 10. She might have none the next day, but she might have 17 the following day. You know, they just kept coming and coming in waves. And so she staggered from one seizure to the next, never recovering from any of them, really, because there was no period of time between the seizures. There were so many of them coming for her to recover. It caused regression. It caused damage to her brain, you know, cognitive delay, everything like that. It's very, very serious. And we faced every day the situation. We faced every day the terror of losing her, because one of these seizures is enough, if it goes on long enough, if it's strong enough, to take a person's life. A person with Dravet syndrome who goes into a serious seizure, they can have permanent brain damage. They can have a heart attack. My daughter had a heart attack before the time she was 5 years old. We nearly lost her then, but she came back out of it. And so that's the kind of horrific day-to-day life that she had. And when we introduced CBD oil in October of 2016, her seizures reduced dramatically. But like what we were missing was we were missing a doctor to prescribe the medication for her. We were missing the supervision of a doctor who had experience in medical cannabis. And we were also missing the opportunity to try to have THC working with the CBD oil to see if her seizures could be reduced even further. And both of those things we were able to find in Holland. Now, when we went to Holland, we were not provided with any type of, we were told that we weren't allowed the treatment abroad scheme for Ava because the consultant wouldn't sign off on it, and the consultant said it was an experimental treatment. So that's why we had to fundraise. And I just want to thank again the people, because after I came on the programme with you the last time, a lot of people made contributions to Ava's GoFundMe page. And, you know, without their support, Ava wouldn't have been able to take this chance to get this opportunity to go over there for such a long period of time that they made us stay there.
Thanks for saying that, Vera. I knew, I mean, it's not out of arrogance at all, but I knew when you came on with us that you'd get a little boost to the fundraising, because our audience, of course, is very interested in these areas and they know a lot more about these issues than I do. So thanks for saying that, and they'll be delighted to hear that.
It's very, very much appreciated. I think I'm going to be thanking people for the rest of my life, you know, because they gave her the chance. They really did.
But you all deserve it. This is, you know, it's wonderful. So this is big news, Vera, isn't it? Because by acknowledging that Ava needs the cannabis oil, the THC, the government is saying, well, okay, you know, we're probably opening the door to maybe a little bit of research and development into what the oil can do, what the THC can do. It might be good news going forward for people like Ava and maybe people with other conditions. Now, I know you were very careful, and you're right as well to say, you know, there's no guarantee because it's worked for Ava that it will work for other people. But I think we'll be talking about you long after we're all gone, Vera. We might even have Ava's name on something, because this is good news, isn't it, in terms of looking at what this might be able to do for people.
Do you know what? I've been thinking about it, right, Richie, and I kind of think in the short term, it isn't good news. Because in the short term, we have a license for Ava, but all of the other people that are out there at the moment that need this so badly, they don't have a license at all at the moment. However, the thing is, it's another license granted. And that means that, you know, people out there now, I mean, the second person that was granted the license were very generous in putting out the details of the application form and everything like that. And, you know, I think that's very important, like whether you're the first, the third, or the 23rd person that's granted a license for this medical cannabis. While it's being granted on an individual basis, people need to share as much as they can about how it's done so that other people can learn. Because, like, the thing is, you said there about the people that are listening to your program knowing more about the cannabis than you do. Well, that's what we were like at the beginning. And if there wasn't people who were generous enough to teach us about the medical cannabis and share their experiences with us, then we wouldn't have, you know, been able to grasp what CBD was, what THC was, what CBG was, what all these different components of the plant mean. And I just feel like morally it's right to do your best to point people in the right direction. I mean, you can't do it for other people, you know, but you can kind of turn the lights on. Do you know what I mean? Because like Paul and I with Ava, we were in such a dark place for such a long time with all the pharmaceutical medications that weren't working. But the more we got to know about the cannabis, the more we learned about the cannabis, the more we realized, you know, that this was it, and it didn't matter how hard it was going to be. And I mean, like, it was hard. And the last couple of weeks that I was over there in Holland with Ava, do you know, I wasn't great. Like, there wasn't much left in the tank, but, like, you know, you had to keep going. You had to keep going for the child.
You've done amazingly well. And I won't keep you much longer, because I know you've had another hell of a day, Vera, and thanks for coming back on the programme to update us. Just a couple of questions before we let you go. What does the licence mean in terms of the duration? Is it a temporary licence, Vera? How does it work?
Yeah, like, I mean, there's a few very obvious problems with the way it's being done at the moment, right? Like, the licence is for 3 months. So the licence needs to be issued again in 3 months' time. And we're not allowed access to our medication in Ireland. We have to go over to Holland every 3 months now to collect our medication and bring it back.
Right.
So, like, that's going to be an ongoing thing now for the future. Now, the other thing about it is the cost of it. In Ireland anyway, epilepsy is recognised as an illness on the long-term illness programme. So when you have a child with epilepsy, their medication is covered by the long-term illness card, because the medications are extremely expensive. Like, when Ava was on, she was on 5 or 6 different medications all together at one stage, and it was costing over 12 or 13,000 euros every year.
Jesus.
Now, at the moment, I mean, Ava's medication is very expensive, and it's a tremendous worry to us going into the future, like, how that's going to be paid for, because we can't do without it. This is it. Like, this is what's keeping her safe. And so I think it's extremely important that there would be some kind of avenue to find how, because, like, Ava's medication, it is a medicine. It absolutely is a medicine. There's no doubt about that. It's prescribed by a doctor. It is a medicine. But in Ireland, the CBD is recognised as a health supplement, and the THC is still categorised as a Schedule 1 drug. So I don't know how it's going to work, whether, like, we need to figure out, like, whether Ava's CBD oil could be included in the long-term illness programme as a food supplement, which kind of is a bit offensive, because if it's categorized as a food supplement, then it's not recognizing its value as a medication. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. So the journey,
and then
the
THC, because it's a Schedule 1 drug, I mean, the difficulty with that is, can a Schedule 1 drug be included on a long-term illness program for as a medicine? So there's a few problems still to iron out, but, like, I mean, it's a worry, because, you know, we can sustain it for a little while, but long term into the future, I don't know how that, like, something will have to be done. And, like, it won't be just for us. It'll be for the fourth and the fifth and the sixth person that gets this medication. Everybody's going to be in the same boat, you know?
So the campaigning, of course, continues, because you're right, the enormous cost of it can't be sustained. It shouldn't be sustained. It shouldn't be borne by you and Paul and the family. And, of course, that's more campaigning that you'll need to do. And, of course, we'll support any fundraising that you need doing, Vera. We'll always put out links over the place.
I appreciate that so much. But, like, we can't depend indefinitely on the generosity of the people, you know, because the government are going to have to, you know, they're going to have to step up.
Absolutely.
And that's the bottom line. Like, that's just the bottom line. People can't be left adrift like this. It's completely unacceptable. And, like, with the campaigning, I mean, I think it's important. I mean, I'd be delighted to talk about it to anybody that wants to talk to me about it, because I think it's very, very valuable for other people out there, you know, that are still struggling to know what to do or how to get it sorted for their family members.
But you've been a massive inspiration for them, and you will be. I've got to ask you, before we leave you go, how is she doing, young Ava? I mean, she's absolutely gorgeous. She obviously pictures of her in all the papers in Ireland again, and even in some of the English papers which covered the story.
The English ones, I didn't know that.
I must send you the links. Yeah, it made some of the tabloids here.
Thanks.
Not at all. So, how is she doing seizure wise? How's it going for her now?
She's really good. I mean, do you know now, like, we came back on the flight on Saturday and there was dreadful fog in Amsterdam and we were delayed and, oh my goodness, we were on the airport, I think, for about 4 hours while there was a delay, and I was worried about her, but we went back on the flight and she was quite jolly on the flight, and when we got to the airport, she was good, and we went home. She's a little tired today. She's been a little tired now today and yesterday. But the thing about it is, like, she's not been home for 6 months, Richie. She hasn't been at home in Habulug since the 17th of June. And it must be, you know, Ava's words are coming along really, really well. She's a lot more verbal than what she was before. But, like, for full sentences now, it's going to take more time to get that out of her, I think. So, like, it's quite overwhelming, I'm sure, for her, because it's overwhelming for me. And I mean, I'm out with her since September, but she has a further 3 months on top of that that she's been away from home. So she's sleeping well, she's put on so much weight. I just, like, her playing with the jigsaws, with the Lego, she's making progress, and I can't wait to get her back to school where, you know, she's going to have the teachers working with her and bringing her on, because you can do so much at home, but, you know, they get so much more out of them in school when they're in the school environment.
And she'll be, obviously, it'll be brilliant for her palling around with her friends and all the excitement of that as well. Vera, we're delighted.
Oh,
that.
Definitely.
Do you know, we're thrilled to hear that. I know that it's only the beginning. There's still a lot of work to do, but, I mean, it's a great boost this side of Christmas anyway. I'm delighted that she's doing well. Thanks for giving us your time and coming back, and give our regards to Paul as well, who's obviously terrific.
Of course, thanks.
And to everybody else. And anytime you want to come back on with us and update us about Ava, or anytime you want a bit of publicity about any of the campaigning going forward, we'll be delighted to have you on. You're an absolute star, Vera.
Thanks a million. That's fantastic. The legislation is coming back to the Dáil in January time. I think it's going back to the Health Committee again for amendments and so forth. So, you know, that's the next thing regarding the legislation anyway that's coming. So hopefully, you know, hopefully that will be positive, because it has to be legislated for here, you know, the same in England. It has to be legislated for, because they're miles and miles ahead of us in Europe, and it's, I think it really is the future. So hopefully, you know, we'll get somewhere in January. We'll keep our fingers crossed and get Gene O'Kenny to get it over the line with the help of
that. You're right. Well, Merry Christmas to you, Paul, Ava, and all the rest of the family. Look after yourself here. You're brilliant. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much. Take care.
Bye for now. Bye. That's the lovely Vera Toomey, live on the line from Cork. What a great lady. And what a great story that is. Yeah, there's plenty of work to be done there in terms of, you know, they've still got to go over to Holland every 3 months to pick up the medication and bring it back, but at least they can do that, and for the time being anyway, Ava can have that medication at home. And of course, you know, we've spoken a lot about this issue off and on over the years. We've had everybody on, and we know that while I'm not a biochemist, while I'm not a biologist, while I'm not a doctor, we know that the oil has had tremendous success in various, well, in more than various, in many areas of bad health, whether it be, you know, chronic arthritis, whether it be epilepsy, like in Ava's case, whether it be pain relief, whether it be, you know, cancers, all these anecdotal stories coming from all over the world. It's all there, if any what he wants to see it. You know, there might be people listening to the programme for the first time and they might think, what, really, really? Yeah, the oil has a profoundly positive effect on so many different things. We've had Rick Simpson on the programme. We've talked about it extensively over the years. I'm really happy about that. It's a really good news story to get over the weekend. It's exactly 16 minutes to the top of the hour. This is Monday's Richie Allen Show, live on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, TuneIn Radio, and of course davidicke.com. Check out davidicke.com for news that doesn't make commercial and national media. Going to take some music. When I come back, we'll read some of your tweets, and there's something else, one or two other stories I want to mention briefly, and then in the second hour, Anne-Marie Waters, the leader of For Britain, joins me for a chat. That's in the second hour. Let's have some music then. Bit of Duran Duran. And I got the Bond theme tunes CD out today. Been listening to it today. Right, this is called A View to a Kill. This is your Richie Allen Show, live on davidicke.com. Tweet at Richie Allen Show now. Tell me what you're thinking and I'll tell everybody else.
Meeting you with a view to a kill. Face to face in secret places, feel the chill.
Duran Duran, A View to a Kill on the Richie Allen Show. Here's a story I wanted to get into in the monologue, but I didn't have time. But it's a very big and a very important story. There's been a huge rise in child and pensioner poverty in the UK over the last two decades. A huge rise. And that's according to a major report. This made the news today. It was on Breakfast News. Was on television and radio this morning. Nearly 400,000 more children and 300,000 more pensioners are living in poverty now than 5 years ago. And during this time, there has been continued increases in poverty across both age groups, young children and senior citizens. Experts are warning that progress towards tackling destitution in this country is, quote, in peril. Joseph Rowntree Foundation, which is a think tank, they have commissioned this report. Well, they carried out the report, which shows that a total of 14 million people in the UK currently live in poverty. That is more than 20%. 20% of UK citizens are living in poverty. Changes to the welfare policy has resulted in the numbers creeping up again. And that's a staggering thing. I need to turn down my mobile phone, don't I? I normally do that. Let me turn it down. It's not like me not to do that. It's a Monday. Yeah, more than one in five. So more than 20% of the population are living in poverty. Now, there are numerous reasons for this, and we cover those reasons on the programme as well. The membership of the European Union, the free movement of people. Not to demonise immigrants, God love them, it's not their fault. It's not their fault, it's not their personal fault. But leaving the doors open to people to come and work here has driven down wages and has resulted, of course, in hardship and difficulty for unskilled workers in this country. We've talked about this, you know, time and time and time again. The benefit system being destroyed by the government. Successive governments in this country has led to this. Think about it for a minute. You know, we talk about David's Hunger Games society agenda. 20% of the country are living in poverty. And a number of the news programmes today ran, say it for me, they ran reports from various parts of the country. And they interviewed young men and women and older men and women who don't have literally a pot to piss in. And it was heartbreaking watching. Heartbreaking. People talking about not having money for basic necessities. Having to decide between buying toilet roll and buying some other sanitary product. This is 20% in a so-called first world country. A world power. 20%. I'm going to keep saying it, 20%. And those in favour of staying in the European Union, warmongering mass murderers like Tony Blair and Alistair Campbell and others, Yvette Cooper in the Labour Party and that clown who's in charge of the Liberal Democrats now, that idiot Vince Cable, they keep telling you that leaving the European Union is going to have catastrophic financial consequences for the people of this country. The people of this country, due to, among other things, but mostly due to our membership of the European Union, have been losing money, hemorrhaging money, for years and years and years. Brexit has nothing to do with that statistic from the Joseph Rowntree Foundation that 20% of people in this country are living in destitution. 20%! There's a good chance that somebody you know very well or somebody living next door to you is not sleeping because they're terrified that they won't find money for this bill or that bill or the other bill by the end of the week. Or that they can't buy sanitary towels. Or that they can't buy, you know, necessities like personal hygiene products. Toilet roll. Basic stuff like food. Incredible that the Joseph Rowntree Foundation brought this report out. Fair play to the UK media for covering it. But none of the commentators and mouthpieces on UK television or radio had the courage to say, well, this isn't because of Brexit. This has been going on for years. maybe, rather than people vote for Brexit because they're a bunch of xenophobic feckin' racists, maybe people are fed up of going to bed and not sleeping a wink because they don't know where the next grocery bill is coming from, the money to pay for groceries, or how they're going to pay their council tax. Maybe that's why they voted. Maybe they didn't vote because they're a bunch of creeping racists. But there wasn't a word today to connect those stories on UK television or radio. It's exactly 5.5 minutes to the top of the hour. I'm going to be speaking with Anne-Marie Waters for Britain in a few minutes' time. I'm looking forward to that. She's not been on before. We're going to take another very quick break, back with comment and more on The Richie Allen Show for Monday, the 4th of December 2017.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markmajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Book launches are often hyped. Then you open the first page and... But David Icke's new book, Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told, really will astonish you. Thought-provoking and controversial. It's available now, so read a real page-turner. Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told by former footballer and presenter David Icke. Available exclusively at davidicke.com.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is The Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com.
A lot of lovely tweets for Vera Toomey and partner Paul and the beautiful Ava. We'll pass those on so that Vera can see them. Richard tweets, if no free trade deal, if there is no free trade deal, it'll be more damaging for the European Union because the UK gets a lot more products from the European Union than the European Union gets from the UK. That's absolutely right, Richard. It sells far more to the UK than the UK sells to it. We've talked about this extensively on the programme. This ridiculous idea that the major corporations of Germany and France alone would allow their governments participate in some sort of punishing tariff on the UK. Of course they wouldn't. Can you imagine the bosses of BMW, of Renault, of Mercedes, of Citroën, of all the rest of the bloody car companies, not to mention food and wine producers, which sell hundreds of millions of pounds worth of produce into the United Kingdom. It's a nonsense. The whole thing is a nonsense. And I'm always mindful of the fact that there are people listening to us who, they're new to programmes like this. And of course, my background is in commercial, national television and radio at every level. And I'm mindful of the fact that when you say some of this stuff, it can put them off. What sort of stuff are you talking about? I hear you cry. Well, the idea that the whole negotiation, 2-year negotiation, said for me, process, is nonsense. It is nonsense. Article 50, this thing when you trigger Article 50, you have to have a deal within 2 years, is actually more about giving the European Union time to prevent Brexit from happening. It shouldn't take more than 2 to 3 days to agree or disagree on any relationship going forward. 2 to 3 days. We're out. The negotiating process is a nonsense. Whether the likes of David Davis and others who are apparently pro-Brexit, whether they understand this or not, I've no idea. But when all of this nonsense about we won't move talks on, we want 50 billion quid from England as part of a divorce settlement, you know, in a normal world, in an uncorrupt and just and sane world, the UK would have said, look, piss off. You do your thing, we'll do our thing. We'll now go and do deals with countries as we see fit. Thank you very much, but we're out of the club. You don't leave your gym membership and spend 2 years, let alone 2 weeks or 2 days, negotiating your way out of it. You tell the gym, I'm out of here. All right? And the gym says, ha-ha, well, in the fine print of the contract, it said that you couldn't leave without giving us 3 months' notice. And you say to the gym, I've cancelled the direct debit. Go and fook off. Right? Couldn't be simpler. It's a minute past the hour. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2 and TuneIn Radio. Anne-Marie Waters joins the programme in a couple of minutes' time. She's the leader of For Britain, a relatively new political party. She stood for the leadership of the UK Independence Party. Of course, Anne-Marie is well known. She's described colourfully in the UK press the way that they traditionally describe people like Anne-Marie. They use the same adjectives, far right and all of that. But I don't buy what I read in the papers. I'm looking forward to chatting with her and coming to understand what it is that For Britain is. But we'll talk about Brexit, we'll talk about today, we'll talk about the Irish border, we'll talk about free speech and much more besides. It is time for some music while we get Anne-Marie on the old Skype there. Here's Bruce Springsteen. Bit of Bruce. If there's anything you'd like me to put to Anne-Marie, tweet it to @RichieAllenShow, @RichieAllenShow, and I'll put it to Anne-Marie. She'll be with us for about 30, 35 minutes. Back after Bruce. Bruce Springsteen and Born to Run on the Richie Allen Show. It's coming up for 4.5 minutes past the hour. Welcome back to the programme, Monday, December 4th, 2017. I'm looking forward to speaking with our next guest. She's originally from Dublin. You'll know her if you are somebody who watches the news. If you pay attention to political affairs here in the UK, you'll know all about her. She recently formed and heads up the For Britain party. That's after she stood for the leadership of the UK Independence Party. After that, she, as I said, she formed For Britain. It's been described as a far-right party. She's also a director of Sharia Watch UK. And as I said, you'll often see her across UK media, television and radio talking about issues. She's often asked to comment on radical Islam here in the UK. Delighted that she's agreed to come on the programme tonight. Let's welcome to the show Anne-Marie Waters. Anne-Marie, welcome. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Sure, I'm not too bad at all, thanks. Thanks for agreeing to come on. Do you recognise these labels, or are you sick of these labels? You know, whenever your name is mentioned, far right extremists, what do you think? Are you tired of it?
It doesn't bother me anymore. You know, people see through it. It's like racist. You know, racist no longer has any power anymore. People can see through it. It is tedious, of course, and it is tedious to have to keep answering over and over again that this is about religion, that my objection to immigration from certain parts of the world is not because of the race of those people, it's because of the religion of those people. I don't believe it's compatible with Western society. I think we've proven it isn't compatible. It's not as if we have no evidence to go on. We have enormous problems already inside European countries because of Muslim immigration. And we don't want those problems. And they are horrific problems like FGM and child marriage. And, you know, we're not talking about minor issues here. And that's our concern, and that's my concern. And, you know, the real extremists, of course, are the people who want to bring down borders and destroy and ignore thousands of years of cultural development, which is different in different parts of the world. That's an extreme position, to want to just bring down borders and melt us all together and expect it all to go okay. It won't. This is my position, is the common sense one. It's the open borders position that's the extreme one.
We'll talk about that shortly, and I'm really keen to talk about free speech as well, because it's a massive attack on freedom of speech in this country and elsewhere. I'm really interested in talking about that. Before that, though, like yourself, I was very much in favour of the UK leaving the European Union. Like yourself, Anne-Marie, I was very much in favour of Ireland rejecting the Nice Treaty and, you know, saying no to the European Union. I was listening to Nigel Farage on the Andrew Marr show yesterday, and Farage said increasingly he's beginning to feel like this is not going to happen, and what we might end up with is some sort of Mickey Mouse lukewarm Brexit, which isn't really leaving, but some sort of associate membership, which kind of would be, you know, an affront to the referendum result last year. Do you think we're going to leave the European Union?
I think that the it's been dragged out in the way that it is, so that they can get a second referendum. And I think it's going to be dragged out, probably, quite possibly, indefinitely. But they want a second referendum. It's wanted by the EU, and it's wanted by a lot of people here in the UK. And I think that's the intention. If we ever do get out, yeah, I think it'll be in name only. If even that, I'm very pessimistic about Brexit and about it actually happening. And like I said, we need to the customs union, the whole thing has to go. We can't be tied to it at all. We have to be completely sovereign and free. I'm not optimistic about it. I think that there may well be a second referendum. And I think there could be real trouble after that.
May looks to be under, you know, increasing pressure from so many different angles. Domestically, problems within her own party. The election manifesto she ran on was bizarre, to say the least. And I've actually had MPs on the programme, former MPs, who said they cannot believe that manifesto. It was almost like somebody wanted to derail that party and cause problems for her. So we're looking at a scenario, Anne-Marie, where maybe over this dispute with the European Union over the border in Northern Ireland, that maybe the DUP might pull the confidence in supply arrangement. That would, of course, bring the government down. And then you've got the flip-flopper himself, Jeremy Corbyn, next year to come in some sort of rainbow coalition. And then we'll be hearing all about the second referendum. This is a possibility, right?
Absolutely. And one of the priorities is to keep Labour out. And May is in it is simply not showing the required leadership that she needs to. She is in a mess. The last general election was a disaster for Theresa May. But she needed to stand up. She needed to really be counted. She needed to really show a backbone with the DUP, with the European Union, with her own party. She really needed to show some backbone and prioritise the result of the referendum. And I don't see that from her. She's simply not a strong enough leader. I mean, the EU is a bully. The EU is a bully. And what's needed for bullies is to stand up to them. The UK has a lot of power and a lot of strength. And May is behaving. She's essentially going to them with a begging bowl. It's complete. The weakness of Theresa May is a terrible thing. But at the same time, I don't see who can replace her. It's a disaster. And the big disaster is that we could well be looking at, if May's government does collapse, we could well be looking at a Corbyn government. I can think of little worse.
Well, tragically, I mean, I don't identify, you know, as a supporter of any political party, Anne-Marie, but tragically, I agree with you, despite the fact that for 30-odd years, Corbyn was a great critic of the European Union and what it had done to wages, to working conditions in this country, what it had done to the fisheries and everything else. Tragically, I absolutely agree with you. Listeners are tweeting us, of course, and I'm getting emails as well. It strikes me as very interesting that we've heard people, you know, business, very successful businessmen and women, among them Sir James Dyson, who said, this whole negotiation thing is pretty much a nonsense. We should just leave. Why would you want 2 years? Just walk away from it. I wonder why it was never mooted, Anne-Marie. That rather than send David Davis over to Brussels, who he might be a nice guy, he might mean well, why didn't we send a hard-nosed businessman or woman into these negotiations? Why didn't we do that?
Lack of strength. Again, lack of leadership, lack of strength. We're behaving like we have no power here. You know, they're just walk away from the thing. If you put in Parliament a European Communities Act repeal bill and repeal the European Communities Act, it puts the UK in the driving seat. We can then start acting as a sovereign state rather than a almost on the naughty step in this club we don't want to be in. And begging for scraps, repeal the European Communities Act and walk out and take control. There is no strength whatsoever. These negotiations are a farce. And as I said, they want the public to think this is an incredible, oh, it's all so complex and it's so difficult. No, it's not. Countries trade with each other all the time. All they have to do is give tariff-free trade, which is in the best interest of everybody, every country in the EU and in the UK, and then stay out of it and let businesses trade with each other. That's all that needs to happen. But they want it to look complicated and they want to drag it on and on and on. And I believe that the aim of much of the establishment, both in the UK and in the EU, is that second referendum, which they want to win.
I absolutely agree with you on that. Finally, on Europe for the moment, and then we want to talk about Islam and freedom of speech and that. The Joseph Rowntree Foundation said today that 20% of the people in this country are living in poverty. Now, I'm not surprised by that. I'm not. There's a great irony, isn't there? Because while this was given some coverage in the media today, the Remainers, people like Tony Blair, you know, I have no hesitation in calling him a warmongering murderer who should be in prison for the rest of his life, saying that, Vince Cable and others saying that when we leave, it's going to be absolutely catastrophic. Nobody's making the connection today that the reason why 20% of the people of this country are living in poverty, well, one of the great reasons anyway, Anne-Marie, is because of the UK's membership of the European Union.
Absolutely, absolutely. And of course, the big I word, immigration, immigration, immigration. We cannot sustain this. And are we going to hand over 44 billion pounds to the European Union now, while 20% of our own people are living in poverty, while people in full-time employment are using food banks. We're throwing away money, wasting it across the public sector, wasting it on foreign aid, and handing over who knows how much to the European Union. Can we get a bit of common sense here and start putting some money into Britain and to helping the British people and to expanding the British economy and getting British people into work and taking people off this dependency they have on the welfare state? We have big problems here at home, and that's where that money is needed. Not 44 billion to the corrupt EU or countless amounts sent off for foreign aid. We have real problems here. We have real poverty here. And we start directing our resources at that for a change.
I had an email today after I said you were coming on, and I knew I would, and it's great. I mean, the wonderful thing about speaking with you is, you know, it's just ignoring what we call mainstream media, who won't do an in-depth interview with anybody to find out what anybody really thinks or to understand where they're coming from, right? That's what we're doing here. I mean, that's what we do, and we don't go along with this progressive madness of name-calling people and virtue signalling. It's a nonsense, Anne-Marie, and it isn't journalism. A friend of mine got in touch with me today. He's from Rochdale. He's a Pakistani, third-generation UK citizen. He said, Richie, interesting you have Anne-Marie on. He said, I would have sympathy with some of what Anne-Marie and others say, but why don't they acknowledge more than they do that there are a lot... In fact, the majority of British Muslim men and women are living in the country, they're working in the country, they're going home, they're going to bed, they're getting up the following day. They are living and they are compatible with British society. They're going to the mosque on a Friday and the rest of the week they're just getting on with their jobs. Well, there might be a problem, and I think there is a problem personally, I do. But my friend says there might be a problem. Why don't groups like, you know, For Britain acknowledge that a great deal of Muslim people have been living here for generations and getting on?
Well, look, first of all, I constantly make the distinction between Islam and Muslims, constantly. It's Islam I have a problem with. Now, it doesn't mean that all Muslims get off the hook with that, because if Islam as an ideology wouldn't actually cause any problems if Muslims weren't putting it into practice. I've never said every Muslim is a problem. I'm saying the religion is a problem, and we have enormous problems specific to that religion. For example, the vast majority of FGM cases in this country involve Muslims. The vast majority of honour violence involves Muslims. The vast majority of the rape gangs are involving Muslims. There's a problem here. And as for, you know, people, why don't I... People ask me, why don't you campaign about this and why don't you campaign about that? Well, look, I'm only one person and there's only 24 hours in a day and we can only campaign about certain things.
Yeah.
I campaign about this, A, because it concerns me deeply for many reasons. As a woman, it concerns me deeply. As a gay woman, it concerns me deeply. As someone who believes very strongly in democracy and in freedom, it concerns me deeply. But also because it's being ignored. And you know how big a problem this is when the politicians consistently and across the board ignore it. They ignore it because they're not up to the job, and all they do is come out with meaningless sound bites to kick the can down the road and not have to deal with anything. There is a problem with Islam. I didn't say every Muslim was incompatible or unable to live in the UK, but Islam, as it is written in its scriptures, is wholly incompatible. As, by the way, described by the European Court of Human Rights, something that judges rarely refer to, even though they refer to it to keep rapists and terrorists in the country. But it is wholly incompatible with a free society, with freedom of speech, and where men and women have the same rights, for example. Wholly incompatible. And I will continue to say so.
Yeah, I mean, there are interpretations, and I have some concerns as well. The Rochdale story, the Rotherham story, why it wasn't picked up. News recently about school books and things that were being said in some Islamic faith schools. I agree with you, I have serious problems with that. But I do, and listen, Anne-Marie, when I tell you I'm no virtue signaller and I'm no progressive, I absolutely mean it. I couldn't be any less of those things. But you know, I feel sorry for Muslims sometimes. I mean, we had this thing in Manchester. How dare I call it a thing? 22 people were murdered by a madman. and his name was Salman Abedi. But you know what pisses me off, Anne-Marie, excuse the language, is that his imam was telling the local police here what was going on. His imam was telling the local police that this guy was going down a bad road. And listen, I'm not laying this at your feet, by the way. I accept what you said, because I've been listening to you and watching you for long enough to know that you're not going out there saying it's all Muslims. I know you're not saying that, so I'm not laying it at your feet. But I just feel sorry for them, because they're like, well, hang on a second, we're citizens, we're doing our thing. What can we do when a madman goes and does that, particularly when we told the police? And you know, some Muslims have contacted this programme, Anne-Marie, and they've asked some very good questions, namely, how did this guy get into the country? How was it that he was off in Syria and he was in Turkey and the French warned us about him? All these questions we should be asking before we start talking about, you know, Wahhabism and Salafism and all of that. So I kind of feel a bit sorry for them. Go ahead.
Well, look, once again, I never have blamed all Muslims. I'm not suggesting, and I've never suggested there aren't decent Muslims. Of course, do you think I've never known any decent Muslims? Of course I do. But look, it's unfortunate that Muslims feel this way, but it's not a priority to me. My priority is that people are being blown up, and if you know, the moderate Muslims really want to help, they can admit and start owning up to the fact that these horrible things are written in the Quran. I don't hear that. It's not about blaming all Muslims. It's about discussing what's written in these scriptures. And Muslims should have the honesty and decency to join us in doing that. Instead, for the most part, what we get is people like me called fascists and racists.
Yeah.
And don't know anything about Islam. I do know about Islam. I have read the Quran. I know the Hadith. It's time for Muslims to own up and to fess up and to own the fact that this stuff is a completely valid interpretation, a literal interpretation of the Quran, and it's time they owned up to that.
Let me come back in on that, Anne-Marie, because it's an ancient text, and most Muslims, they take out of it what people take out of the Torah and the Bible: love your neighbour, look after one another. What about if a Muslim? Let me just finish this quick question. You come straight back in then. What if a Muslim man was listening to this and he said, well, Anne-Marie's from Dublin, Richie's from Waterford. Imagine you were asked to disown the IRA. Now, it doesn't matter whether what the IRA were doing came from the Bible or not, but they were blowing people up in pubs in this country. What if you were told that you should be out there condemning that when you had nothing to do with it? That's a fair question.
First of all, I would condemn it. If people ask me to condemn a bombing, I'm going to condemn it.
Yeah, but you shouldn't be forced to condemn it, though.
No, who's being forced to condemn it? It's a perfectly legitimate thing. If I'm asked to condemn a bombing, I will condemn it. I condemn bombings. But look, to compare this with the IRA is absurd. It's absurd. The IRA were a political left-wing terror group with a political aim. What we are dealing with now is a global religious war being waged against us. It is a war that comes from a perfectly legitimate literal reading of the Quran. It is an entirely, entirely different situation. And if you're asking me if people blamed me for the IRA, then yes, I'd be upset. But I'm not blaming Muslims for Islamic terrorism. I'm blaming Islam and the terrorists. But if someone asked me to condemn a bombing, of course I'll condemn it. Of course I'll condemn it. I'll condemn the IRA unequivocally.
Yeah, I think they would say the expectation that you should condemn it because you're Irish. You know, I would condemn it like you, but I wouldn't. You know, I wouldn't allow, you know, the expectation that I should condemn it because it had nothing to do with you and it had nothing to do with me.
Let me speak.
Go on.
I understand what you're saying and I take your point and it's a valid one. But in the grand scheme of things, it's not really what I am worried about. I am far more concerned about the blowing people up in the
okay. Well, so am I. So let's move on to that. By the way, let me just do a quick recap. Anne-Marie, many of your followers listening in tonight, Anne-Marie Waters is live on the line to us. I don't know where Anne-Marie is, actually. It's none of my business where she is, but I ordinarily say where our guests are. Maybe you're in London, Anne-Marie?
No.
You're not in London.
In England.
You're in England somewhere. She's somewhere in England. Anne-Marie Waters, originally from Dublin, stood for the UKIP leadership, of course, has formed the For Britain Party, a new political party, as usual, as you'd expect with Anne-Marie and others. The progressive press label her fascist, racist and all the rest of it. I don't believe she's fascist or racist. And I believe that there's an agenda to describe people as fascist and racist because that ultimately prevents discourse and discussion about these issues, rational discussion. Anne-Marie, we've had... I don't want to get into the whole history of Wahhabism and the British Empire in the Middle East going back over the years, but we talk to a lot of people on this programme, and they're not conspiracy theorists. They're former MI5, former CIA people. And they will say that Anne-Marie Waters is quite right to worry about some of the things that young men, young Muslim men in this country are doing. They would say she's absolutely right to be thinking about that, and we should be talking about it, and she shouldn't be called a fascist. However, we've got to go to the source of it. Why do we have this? Why is this happening? And to them, this goes back to the intelligence agencies of our countries funding, training and arming these nutters to bring about regime change in certain countries in the Middle East. That, of course, Anne-Marie, as you well know, often results in the deaths of millions of people and the displacement of millions more. And through that migrant flow, then, you get some of these lunatics that you've been describing. Some of her, I could name these people, you know, former Assistant Treasury Secretary Paul Roberts, Ray McGovern, the most decorated CIA man that ever lived. All these people saying our intelligence agencies have given these guys oxygen and given them life. What do you say to that?
Look, this is called life. You know, geopolitics continues and has always happened. We have the games that the West have played across the years in the Middle East. If you think I think that the West is a saint, think again. I don't. But look, nothing the West can do will make Saudi Arabia chop off the heads of its blasphemers. That's their fault. And it gets, you know, to me, I get very weary of this. Everything is somehow the West's fault. Everything that happens in the world is somehow because of some move we've made. You know, other people are responsible for themselves. The other people are responsible for how they react to things. And you know why this jihadism has been going on for 1400 years? You know, some people will blame it on the United States. Jihadis were attacking the United States years, only decades after the United States was formed.
But they weren't here, though. They've not been here. This is the thing, you see. They've not been here, Anne-Marie.
You're looking for the base of it. As I said, global politics will take place. The West is no saint, but it's not the only one to cause problems either, and it's not the only one responsible for things. Look, nothing the West can do causes Saudi Arabia and Iran to impose these medieval, grotesque, brutal, religion-based punishments, and these jihadis are driven by religious fervor.
But these on a second. Let me jump in, Anne-Marie. Let me jump back in. These.
But you're not letting me finish.
I am letting you finish, and you'll get loads of time. No, I've got to interject there because you're talking about domestic problems with human rights issues in Saudi Arabia and Iran, and I would absolutely agree with you. But we're talking about the destruction of countries. Yeah, but hang on. We're talking about the destruction of countries like Iraq and Syria and Libya. The willful and wanton destruction of those countries by Western imperialism, which has resulted in that migrant flow into Europe directly, right?
No, that's a matter of opinion.
Anne-Marie, it's a matter of fact.
Well, look, when the West intervenes, it's wrong. When it doesn't intervene, it's wrong. My point is that there is a religious war. The religion is what's driving jihadism. Western actions are definitely recruiting mechanisms, but the religion is what drives it. It is not the West's fault. Jihad is not the West's fault.
Let me just talk about the migrant issue, because you've talked a lot about the, and I would agree with it, the frankly insane decision by Germany to allow, at the behest of, you know, international financiers, George Soros and others, to allow 1 million migrants into Germany. It's absolutely insane.
A million plus.
But those migrants, Anne-Marie, would not exist if our intelligence agencies, that's the US, the UK and Israel, were not funding jihadists in Syria. It wouldn't be happening.
We have people arrested for rape from Gambia, from Eritrea, from every African country you can think of. Give me a break. These are not refugees and asylum seekers. Very few of them, I would imagine. A small percentage are. This is a opportunism. Half the Middle East and Africa made its way. People from half the countries in the Middle East and Africa made their way to Germany. It's absurd to suggest we created that. It's a largely economic, people looking for an economic better life. That's absurd to suggest that we have created this. Merkel opened the door and a hell of a lot of people came.
And hundreds of thousands of those in Germany now are from Syria. Hundreds of thousands from Syria and places like Libya. Now, with what's happening in Yemen, we're going to see a mass exodus from Yemen. The point I'm making is that wouldn't be happening if our governments weren't intervening in those countries. We wouldn't have that problem. And I'm agreeing with you that within...
I think we should be staying out of them altogether. I'm completely against intervention unless it's for our own direct threat to us. I don't want us intervening in these countries. I think we should be staying out of them altogether.
So why are we then? Why do you think that is? Why do we have millions of migrants leaving countries that, even if you and I didn't like the government they had, those countries were stable. Now those countries are in ruins and millions of people have left those countries. And by the way, I agree with you. Within that migrant flow will be lunatics, Anne-Marie, and they will seek to do things in this country.
Have to be lunatics. It's people who why do Europeans matter so little in this? Why are we expected to sit back and watch this absolute transformation of our countries? Why are we so unimportant in all of this?
I don't disagree with this, by the way. I just want to try and nail down who's responsible for it.
Several people are responsible, including us. But if you think I think that it would be my policy to intervene in these countries, it wouldn't be.
Yeah.
Several people's fault, but that's neither, you know, the fact remains that innocent European people are having our countries transformed in front of our eyes. If we dare to object, we are called fascists and racists and Nazis.
Which is outrageous.
That's what my concern is.
Which is outrageous. And listen, I wouldn't tolerate it. You know, somebody being called fascist and racist because they have questions about these issues. I can't abide by it. I've worked at every level of the media, Anne-Marie. The reason I do an independent programme today is because I can't bear what's happened to the media. Because we don't have discourse. We don't have arguments with people. You know, we have progressives like Owen Jones, and we have progressives like various people writing for The Guardian and The Independent, working as talking heads, seeking to shut down discussion and to label people as fascist and racist. I don't believe it. Who would benefit? I don't mean individual names. Forget names. Who stands to benefit if cultures are diluted to the extent that they are being diluted? And if majority cultures are losing out to minority cultures, who does that benefit in the long run?
Well, of course it benefits the elite, the political and financial elite. Look, we're seeing the EU is essentially some weird hybrid of corporatism and socialism. Look, there's a transformation of society so that people are simply units, working units, not citizens. Governance will be unaccountable, and it is already unaccountable because we can't remove the chiefs at the top of the EU. And to the mass immigration to dilute our cultures is to disempower us. Culture and nation is a great unifier, gives people pride, gives people strength, gives people a sense of something to fight for. All of this has been taken away from us to weaken us and turn us into units, working units, to keep them in power. And of course the big companies love it because they're getting to import cheap labour from all over the world. And the rich, as usual, are the ones who'll benefit. Who else?
And of course it's their policies being carried out by the various governments that they've placed in charge of our countries, not just this country, but Ireland and the rest of them. We've got about 5-6 minutes left on this. It's great to have Anne-Marie on the programme. I will tweet out a link to For Britain. Anne-Marie's Twitter, by the way, if you're not following her and you do want to follow her, it's at AMD Waters. That's at AMD, that's Alpha Mother Delta Waters, AMD Waters. Follow her there, and it's for Britain .uk, recently formed political party. Loads of interest in this, typically enough. It's coming down kind of on both sides, people saying that they feel that Anne-Marie is blaming Islam for everything. I'm not sure that she is, to be fair. And we've disagreed on that anyway. I've put all the counterpoints to Anne-Marie. A lot of people saying Richie is blind. Follower of Anne-Marie's called Craig is saying Richie is blind. I'm fed up with these radio presenters apologising for radical Islam. I'm not, Craig. I'm not apologising for it all. I accept that there's an issue and it must be dealt with. I'm interested in why there is an issue, how these people are getting in, who's behind it, and if there's any chance that we can work with everybody to deal with it. And that means, you know, Muslims, Sikhs, Catholics, Jews. It doesn't bloody matter who. Keep those tweets coming in even to at Richie Allen Show. Tell me this, Anne-Marie. We've talked a lot about this recently. Free speech. Now, of course, we had the big thing last week. Donald Trump tweeted some stuff that had been put out there by Britain First. There was a massive furore, of course. Staggers me to see how many progressives they can put on a television programme in the afternoon to condemn and to demand that people be banned. I've always believed, Anne-Marie, no, I'm not going to lie, I'm going to tell the truth. I used to be one of these idiots some years ago before I educated myself. I used to be one of these idiots, finding racism and prejudice everywhere. Not anymore. But it's ludicrous to me, the idea that just because somebody says something you disagree with them, that A, you would deplatform them, B, you would ban them, C, you would label them some, you know, horrible name, call them some horrible name, and D, oh, they can't come to our country. I don't think this is funny anymore. I think it's very serious. It's devastating to free speech. What do you think?
Free speech is on its last legs at every level. Universities are particularly frightening. But politics, you know, you're not allowed to have a view on, especially immigration and Islam. These are the big two. If you have anything except praise, you're in trouble. You're going to be shunned and you're going to be labelled and you're going to be attacked. We must be able to speak freely about everything, and there can't be a price to pay. You know, people will say to me, but you're saying it now. What do you mean you're not allowed to say it? Look, I've lost my career over this. I'm supposed to be a lawyer. I'll never be a lawyer because of this. People write to me all the time saying they risk their jobs if they turn up to events and things. This is not freedom. Even if you're legally and technically able to say it, if you're risking losing your job, this is not freedom to speak. And we're living in a country dominated by bullies, by leftist bullies who have control of the media and have control of the public sector, the two most important things for control in a society. And they have control of all of it. And they will relentlessly bully individuals who dare to raise a question, even a question. And if an example that I'd give, if, say, you know, if you're in a boardroom at an NHS governing meeting, or whatever it may be, and they're talking about how they're going to spend £1 million or so on a transgender champion GPs.
Yeah.
If you're a person in the room and put your hand up and says, hold on a minute, this is ridiculous, you are in trouble.
Oh, you're a bigot.
It doesn't have to be. There doesn't have to be a law saying you're not allowed to say this in order for a society to be living in fear of speaking their minds. And when a society is in fear of speaking its mind, it's not a free society. It's a very dangerous one. And democracy, of course, is its first and most important victim. And it's happening. It's happening.
There's a policy on forbritain.uk, and I was glad to see it. I'm going to read out the policy line. For Britain believes in freedom of thought and the rights of the individual to assent to or reject any philosophical, political or religious belief system without penalty. Does that go for Zionism? Because we've covered cases in recent months and even going back last year where academics, where politicians and others have been deplatformed, have been thrown out of universities because they object to... whether they're right or wrong doesn't matter as far as I'm concerned. They object to the Israeli government's policy in Gaza. And we've seen charities like the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism seek to label people as racist and bigoted because they you know, they have serious problems with the behaviour of Israel. Again, whether they're right or wrong doesn't matter. Does that include Zionism? If people want to reject Zionism, because you often get accused, and you know this, you and others, oh, Anne-Marie and others, really, they're just Zionists. They're hiding behind the fact that they're Zionists. Should people be allowed to criticise Zionism if they want?
I'm surprised to be even asked that. Of course people can criticise Zionism. Of course people can criticise Israel. We can criticise whatever we like. That's the whole idea. But I have to say, I'm seeing quite a lot of no platforming anyone who speaks in support of Israel. I'm seeing that quite frequently.
Really?
So absolutely. So that's definitely coming from both sides, I can assure you.
I wouldn't tolerate that either. Yeah.
Zionist. I mean, come on, tinfoil hat time. It really is. I support Israel, unconditionally. I like the West. I love the West, but I know that sometimes the West does things wrong. Same with Israel, but I do support Israel. I support it because it's a place of safety for a vulnerable religious group. And now that we're seeing this mass immigration from the Muslim world into Europe, indeed, it's proving that it's been needed again. 10,000 Jews left France for Israel in 2015 alone, and largely because they no longer feel safe there. And you're seeing that repeated in countries across Europe, including Germany and the UK.
And yet there's no, I mean, we speak to Jewish groups in this country, and there's no real evidence of any growth in anti-Semitism at all. I mean, we've challenged the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, which is a ludicrous charity, which spends its time labelling people as anti-Semitic and Holocaust deniers when they're not. And by the way, I agree with you. If I was given the chance to wave a wand in the morning, we'd have a pre-1967 border two-state solution. That's what I would do. But when we want to talk about Zionist influence in UK politics and in American politics, and we want to explore that, and we want to talk about what Israel does and, you know, how Mossad operates in countries, we should be able to do that. As you and I are talking now, without being labelled as hateful or anti-Semitic. I wasn't, you know, I expected you to give the answer you gave. I didn't think that you wouldn't, but you understand it's an open platform. Listeners have tweeted it. You know, I know Tommy Robinson gets accused all the time. He's worn Mossad T-shirts on interviews, which has wound people up. I couldn't care less what he wears in interviews, but I said I'd put the question to you. But generally, freedom of speech, you reckon, on its last legs, we're going to... I mean, it's a thought police situation we're having here, Anne-Marie, isn't it? We're having people destroyed across, you know, academia and elsewhere because they have opinions that have been deemed as abhorrent or unacceptable by this kind of progressive multiculturalist kind of agenda. How do we deal with that? Final question. How do you overcome that?
How do we restore freedom of speech?
Yeah, how do you do it, yeah?
With a magic wand. No, look, a lot of it comes from the politicians and from leaders. We've had several examples now where they had an opportunity to stand up for freedom of speech, going all the way back to the Rushdie affair, which was a prime example of an opportunity they had to stand up for freedom of speech, and they didn't. But largely because they're afraid of votes. If they set certain religious groups are afraid of losing votes. But restoring freedom of speech, we need to change the laws and get rid of all this hate crime nonsense. You mentioned police state. You know, it's literally a police state, they're telling us on Twitter that they'll find people who use nasty words or who use threatening, or, you know, this is the police are on Twitter telling people that they will, if you say nasty things on social media, they'll track you down. Meanwhile, there's a girl being gang raped down the road and no one gives a damn. You know, we've got to get rid of this hate nonsense, restore equal citizenship, and that no one is a greater victim because of their skin colour or anything else than another person. This is absolutely key. Getting rid of this hate crime nonsense is key. And getting the police to do some policing again. How we do that is fire several police commanders and send out a very strong message that you will start enforcing the law. We'll repeal hate speech legislation, which is what it is. And we'll make the police do their job again. This is key. It's just a starting point. But we also need politicians who acknowledge... who even understand. I'm not sure many of them even understand the importance of freedom of speech. Don't always assume politicians are the sharpest knives in the drawer. I don't think a lot of them even understand it. And they'll do and say anything they think will get them votes. So freedom of speech is absolutely, absolutely, absolutely key. And we need responsible leaders willing to stand up for it, get rid of this hate crime nonsense, and make the police get off Twitter and stop analysing people's social media accounts and get out there and start arresting criminals. This is a starting point.
Brilliant. Yeah, they're using artificial intelligence going forward, which is crazy. To find out more about For Britain and the policies of the party, go to forbritain.uk. I enjoyed chatting with you, Anne-Marie. Thanks for giving us your time. I really appreciate it, and I hope you'll come back on again in the future.
Thanks a lot.
Cheers, Anne-Marie. Bye for now. Anne-Marie Waters, the leader of For Britain. Check out forbritain.uk. Talking to us there about a number of different issues. Radical Islam, free speech. Who's at fault in terms of the migrant flow that we've seen in recent years into Europe and beyond, and more besides. Interesting stuff. It's exactly 16 minutes at the top of the hour on The Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, davidicke.com, of course, and TuneIn Radio as well. Always good to be with you. A lot of tweets came in during that. To follow what other people are telling me on Twitter, you just have to put Richie Allen Show, all one word, in Twitter. Press enter, and you'll see what other people are tweeting to me. And then, if you want, you can get involved, you can argue, you can fight, you can scratch eyeballs and tear hair out. Or you can just have a calm, rational exchange of views. This is Eric Clapton and Bad Love on The Richie Allen Show. Come on! Got some really good guests coming up later in the week. Kevin Myers, the Irish journalist, joins me on Thursday. Don't miss Kevin Myers. And Jordan Maxwell is back on Wednesday. Can't wait for Jordan. This is Bad Love, back in two. Clapton and Bad Love on the Richie Allen Show. Put the air guitar down. Put the air guitar down, I said. Put it down. The air guitar. Good stuff. 12 to the top of the hour. Ah, some of you are happy. Jordan Maxwell back on the show. It's been a few months. It's been about 6 months since Jordan was on. Maybe a little bit longer than that. He joins me. And the Irish journalist and author, Kevin Myers, whom was fired by the Sunday Times. Wasn't the Sunday Independent, was it? The Sunday Times? For anti-Semitism, even though he never said anything or wrote anything that was remotely racist. Kevin Myers joins the program on Thursday. That's going to be interesting. It's going to be very interesting indeed. Right, it's time for a very quick break. Just a very quick break. We'll do that when we come back. I'll read out some of your tweets. A lot of tweets came in when I was chatting with Anne-Marie. So back into...
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Book launches are often hyped. Then you open the first page and... But David Icke's new book, Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told, really will astonish you. Thought-provoking and controversial. It's available now, so read a real page-turner. Everything You Need to Know But Have Never Been Told by former footballer and presenter David Icke. Available exclusively at davidicke.com.
Right, that would be me then. I was daydreaming there. Can you evening dream? I was evening dreaming there. Alrighty. I enjoyed chatting with Anne-Marie Waters. I stand by what I said in the interview. You know, we've got to move on. When I say we, am I allowed to speak for everybody else? No, I'm not. I maybe need to speak for the media. The media. We got to move on from labelling people as racist or fascist, even if we really don't like what it is they say. Even if we don't agree with what it is they say. Now, I can find plenty of common ground with Anne-Marie, and we found plenty of common ground. But I don't believe that the Muslim population of the UK represent a clear and present danger to my security, to my safety, to my sanctity. No, they don't. We have a problem in some sections of society, and that problem has been allowed to develop by those who seek to conquer us through division. I've always believed that. It is a... There are so many names for the agenda. It is a Zionist agenda. Yes, it is. It is a neocon agenda. Yes, it is. But it goes far deeper than that. You know, to see Muslims in this country as a group, or anybody, no matter who it is, as the enemy or the problem. Now, I don't think Anne-Marie Waters thinks like that. I think she explained herself and she fleshed out her ideas, I think, quite well. But there are a lot of people who see the Muslim as the problem or the immigrant as the problem. And I said this on Facebook today. It's short-sighted. Yes, immigration has destroyed the livelihoods of untold amounts of people in this country. But whose fault is that? Is it the fault of the man, woman and family who've come from wherever, whether it be Nigeria, whether it be Cameroon, Puerto Rico, whether it be from Mexico? Whose fault is it? Whose fault is it really? These are the questions. We've got to get beyond. Got to get beyond the identitarianism, as I have labelled it. There isn't such a word, but I'm inventing a word. Identitarianism. Got to get outside of the black and white dynamic. Things are not black and white, no pun intended. You will get as many lunatics in Christian communities as you will get lunatics in Muslim communities. That is a given. That's a fact. It's a statistical fact. Problem we have here, and we have in Germany, and we have in Sweden, and nobody wants to talk about it, is that we are seeing problems with some men, mostly, almost exclusively, with ideas, Wahhabist, Salafist ideas, men who are being shoehorned is a bad word, but they're being allowed into this country and others because of the inevitable consequences, because of violence, because of fear, and that suits one agenda and one agenda only. And Anne-Marie called it the elite and the wealthy. She will know, because I'm sure she did her homework, that at this programme, we think it goes beyond that. You know, we're being driven to stand on street corners opposite one another, screaming abuse at one another, because we've been set against one another. And that's what multiculturalism is all about. To set communities against one another by impositioning a majority culture. This is Frankfurt School stuff, this. And alienating them while pandering to the needs of a minority culture. This is what you're going to get. But it's not the fault of the minority culture, right? It's not their fault. It's what we have to get beyond. Who's behind it? What is behind it? You know, decisions like allow a million migrants into Germany are not just bad decisions or poor policy decisions. Far deeper than that. They are carefully thought out policy decisions to divide and conquer Germany in the same way as it is happening in other countries. But people have to move beyond blaming the arriving migrant, right? It's because it ain't black and white. It's not polarised. Got to get beyond identity politics. The race to the bottom of the victimhood barrel. Blame, 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 blame. While the puppet master, the string master, is laughing his arse off as we scream at one another and we call one another racist and fascist and we blame Muslims for everything and they blame us for everything. When I say us, I'm not part of any particular group. Right? It's the same with blaming Jews for everything. It's ridiculous, it's short-sighted, and those really pulling the strings are laughing their arses off. That's where I'm leaving the programme tonight. I've always believed that. Well, I've come to believe that, and for the best part of the last 10 to 12 years, I've believed that, and I haven't seen any evidence to suggest that I'm wrong or I'm off the mark. Going to leave you with that thought. Thank you very much, by the way, Vera Toomey, and continued success to Vera and Paul and beautiful Ava all the best to her in as she continues to deal with the epilepsy and as her condition has improved. And thanks to Anne-Marie Waters for coming on the programme. I enjoyed that discussion, that debate. I look forward to doing more of those in the future. I'm going to leave you with some Elvis Presley. And this is absolutely one of my favourite songs of all time. We'll do it all again tomorrow, Tuesday. That's Tuesday at 7 p.m. UK time. Thanks to Simon for doing the YouTube videos. Thank you for listening. Until tomorrow, leaving you with the King. Bye now.
I just can't help believing when she smiles up soft and gentle with a trace of misty morning and a promise of tomorrow in her eyes. I just can't help believing when she's lying close beside me and my heart beats with the rhythm of her sighs. This time the girl is gonna stay. This time the girl is gonna stay. I just can't help believing when she slips her hand in my hand and it feels so small and helpless that my fingers fold around it like a glove.